fifth in late potential with a balance of seven. Now here is the graph that if you didn't understand the pace of race, pace of horse, which I pray you will come to understand, this graph spells it out for you. This graph by fraction shows how the horse ran against the pace of the race that you used to qualify the horse and to evaluate the horse. Who ranks on top? That lowly place horse, the one that didn't rank better than fourth on almost anything else. He ranks on top. Why? He had a deficiency of 2.27 in the first fraction. He made up ground in the second fraction, 0.70 plus, and 0.158 plus in the third fraction, so it ranks on top. It is the number one long shot potential, but this shows you in numbers just why it's the number one long shot potential. Who ranks under it? For best overcoming the pace of the race it ran against, the ultimate winner, Court, who paid $49 and something. Now, Sarai only ranks fourth. Why? Because it had very little deficiency in the first fraction, made up, and came in third. So you don't use this as a ranking chart. You use this to see which horses maintained the pace, set the pace, were closest to the pace, and which horses overcame the pace that they ran against the most. Now the final graph is the incremental matchup graph. Now that, unlike the pace graph, deals with first fraction, second fraction, third fraction, and a ranking for total pace, which is a number of factors factored in with its third fraction. On this graph, we see a different picture than we did on the one at the top of the page because we're using fractions as opposed to calls. So who takes the lead in this race? Class. Class takes the lead. It's followed by Soraya, then Court, then Solon, and then Chance, our ultimate place horse. But what happens to the horse that took the lead, Class? It drops to fifth. It loses much ground in the second fraction. And that is a telltale factor. When a horse starts losing ground in the second fraction, that is something to be very careful of. It makes up ground in the third fraction, but that dip, that V pattern, is what destroys Class's chance in this race. Whereas the horse that ranks second, Soraya, takes a little dip, less of a dip, and makes it up in a third fraction of total pace to rank second. The winner, of course, starts off, this is an ideal pattern for any race. The winner starts off, this is 7 furlongs, which runs more sustained, incidentally, than by our standards, than shorter sprints. This horse starts off, ideally, third, moves to second in the second fraction, and goes on to win the race by a bunch. So we look now at bottom line, betting line, and get the odds projection of these five contenders that we've left in. Court ranks on top. It's supposed to go off at 9-5. Pays $49. It has a balance of 2. Next comes a tie between Solon and Soraya. Soraya shows, pays 10-something. They are tied. They both are projected at 3-1, both with a balance of 6. Chance finally moves up, doesn't it, our place horse? It becomes a double-digit horse with projected odds of 7-2. Well, this is a matter of personal decision. Nobody can make the decision how to bet for you, but the horse is projected at 7-2. It does place. It keys an exacta. It places and pays $15.80, and the exacta pays 207.08. The quinella, incidentally, $251.08, more than the exacta. But look at this. You've got the winner and the show horse ranked 1 and 2. If you were to include that place horse, The trifecta pays $5,296.90. And it was the number one long shot potential. So overlooking the long shot potential, overlooking the fact that it overcame the pace of the race, it ran against the greatest, one gives up $5,000-some-hundred. Now I have to tell you that I did this race. There's a tape on this race in explaining the Trackmaster download. I did it with absolutely no consciousness of what I was doing except to accept the best of the last three comparable race speed ratings. That was done so easily, so mechanically, and so without any insight that I should be ashamed to call myself a handicapper, which I'm really not. What I am is a user to the optimal benefit of myself of today's methodology. Here's another race. Kind of speaks for itself, just to show you how to use these primary and supplemental readouts. Don't just look, as so many people are doing, and I get so many letters about this, they're just looking at bottom line, betting line, and not looking at their corollaries. You've got to look at them. Look at this horse, Verone, Veronsky's daughter. We call it Verona. It pays 1460. Look at its rankings. To begin with, starting from left to right, it's got the number one long shot potential. It's third on total pace. It's first on late pace rating. It's first on factor X. It's first on factor X on the second go-around. It's second on entropy. It's second on total speed. It's first on total pace potential. It's first on the line score ranking of the supplemental readouts, even though it's fourth on the primary. So don't just look at the primary, because it ranks fourth on the primary readout. See the four under LSR? But look where it is on the supplemental readouts. It's number one. And on fractals, it ranks 1-1-1. Now, I don't know what I do to get people to look at those supplemental readouts. I have letters that come to me, say, I get the winner, the place, and the show horse in the top five, but I don't know which one to bet, because sometimes there is a horse that is a better long shot potential horse, a horse that will pay higher odds, that is ranked above on the bottom line betting line, the horse that ultimately wins. How do I correct this problem? Look at a full set of corollaries. Just because a horse ranks higher on bottom line, betting line, that's not the answer. That's not the total answer. That's a good overall answer. That's a quickie answer if you haven't got much time to do any analysis of your readouts, or if you lose your readouts, or if you fail to examine the race, you're going to lose a lot more than you will if you do this. The Roan ranks first on the supplementals and fourth on the primaries. But put them together and you see the horse has more reason to bet than not to bet. Pays 1460, 620, etc. Here's one that I just threw in because a client sent it to me. The first day using the Trackmaster download, the horse got this horse ranked 1, 2, 3, 4 on bottom line, betting line. Once again, it's fourth, and people say, oh, I only play the top two. Top two-itis is a terrible disease. So don't be guilty of having it. It is projected odds of 3-1. Look under odds, our odd lines, under bottom line. It pays $101.20. Sure, it's ranked fourth. But take a look at its total ranking situation. On the primary rankings, it ranks fourth. That correlates with where it is on bottom line, betting line. It has very little to recommend it except it's number one on factor X. Now, factor X has proven across the country not to play the number one, but the top three, factor X, are winning a tremendous number of races across the country. Now that could change even before this tape is released, but it'll come back. Factor X since 1982, when we first introduced it, has been a very important, vital factor in predicting winners. Why? Because it shows how well the horse ran the early portion of the race and the late portion of the race. It combines the two for overall performance of the horse. But take a look. Under Factor X, that horse is number one. Under total speed, it's number one. Under total pace potential, it's number two. But here's the one that people overlook. Fractals, it's number one, two, and three. It's the best early fractals, the best second best late fractals, and third best total performance. Would you not take a horse ranked third and ranked second on the line score? Look over under line score under SUP. LSR is two. How many of you overlook a horse ranked that high, even if it were third, when it's going to pay $101.20? I would say many, many of you. The rest of it is for you to peruse. Here are some reports from Tony Hill, Anton Hill, Paul Udell, and some blanks for you to fill them out yourself. If you start filling out this chart, I'll guarantee you, you will know where your winners are coming from. Now we're going to pause this tape before we go on to the putting it all together and the final analysis. After we fade out and fade in, I'd like you to go to the kitchen and get an onion. Or pause it and go down to the store and get an onion. Because an onion, believe it or not, can be shown to be the crux of all handicapping problems, of all handicapping solutions. Freud used to use the onion, as did have psychiatrists and psychologists ever since, to show the peeling away in human behavior and in human perspective, human philosophy. You peel the onion, you get down to one layer, you get layers after layer until you get to the core. Actually, it works better with an artichoke. An artichoke is from Jerusalem, imported to as many things from Jerusalem to California, where it's very popular, but it's not sold throughout the nation. We will also use an artichoke because the heart of the artichoke is where the best tasting meat is. But we'll use an onion. So get yourself an onion as we fade out and get ready to put it all together with the psychology of winning. I'll see you after the fade out.
Now, continuing the third in our one-on-one audio, video, certain methodology today workshops, putting it all together and the psychology of winning. Here he is, the doc.
So now we come to the nitty-gritty. What really works, what really will make you a winner. I even put a coat and tie on. Coat and tie on to do a cooking show. Remember, we asked you to bring an onion or go get one out of the cupboard. I use the onion. There's a whole onion. There's one I've started to cut up. You and I as human beings and all human beings have been layered by life. Each little experience puts a little layer over the real core of our being. And each one of those layers influences how we respond to a given circumstance. We're talking mainly about winning at the races. We've had multiple layers. We've had layers of rules. We've had layers of don't play certain kinds of races. We have layers of I never play maiden races. We've had layers of races that say, never bet a horse unless it wins places or shows. Or I can give you, and you can give me, hundreds and thousands of little layers that laid over you. And you've had layers imposed upon you by parents or friends or in loco parentes, preachers and what have you. Each one of those layers is stuck to you. Each one of those rules, each one of those injunctions. Wait a minute, where do we get down to the heart? Get to peel away and peel away and peel away and make your hands smell like onions. I once said last tape that even though they're not sold universally in this country, the artichoke was actually better than the onion. Freud used the onions to peel away the various layers of negative human response, negative human learning. But take the artichoke. It's a beautiful little thing. Now down here, very, very hard, underneath all that, is where the sweet meat is. That's what we dip into butter. That's what we call artichoke hearts. That's what they sell in grocery stores in frozen form. But the artichoke is much easier to peel away. Let's peel away. Never go to the track on a rainy day. Always demand at least 14 days between the last race. Demand 3 workouts. Never bet a female going into a male race. Never bet a turf horse on the dirt. Never bet a dirt horse on the turf. Only play races where anybody can win them. Play obvious races. Play races where all the good things are obvious. You don't have to go any farther than just look. Thousands and thousands of little rules and axioms that we've been taught. It's getting a little wet. This doing a cooking show is not really part of my bag here. There goes about $50 worth of print. Oh, well, gradual. Now it gets real rough. We don't want to eat any of that stuff. That must be stuff about feeding horses doping and screwing up the calls so they'll 2/5 of a second off. So now you take all that out of there. Take out all the junk, all the stupid information we've collected over the dozens or however many years we've been at it. Now what have you got? Now what have you got? You got the pure heart of the artichoke. That's the part you had to ply away all that nonsense in order to get. You understand what I'm trying to tell you? Both psychology and psychiatry, and in good eating, is a series of plying away that which is not good for us, not edible, and handicapping, not viably usable. Ply it away, tear it away, peel it away, until we get down to the heart that is indeed soft, tender, pliable, viable, and ultimately usable. Come to the end of the purely informational part of these 3 tapes, which took 3 times longer, incidentally, than the true nitty-gritty, which is the inspirational, the stuff that goes on in our head, our philosophical outlook, our attitude. Before we get to that, I want to remind you about an entering your horses. You'll do a lot better if you refuse to enter under N. Shane refuses to do it. A lot of people refuse to do it. The need to lead is a very important thing. So if a horse needs to lead, put the degree by which it needs to lead under that N on your opening lines. And when it says under T, if it's a tandem race, be sure you indicate the tandem. Be sure you look at the ESP on the energy generator. That'll tell you a lot about the horse's style. And above all, go to the left of that equalized lines and look at how many horses I've entered, sometimes 3 for each horse, 3 lines for each horse, and then I hide them because I always take the best of the 3 lines I might enter. And when you hide them, you will get down to the bottom line betting line, which gives you the winner first. The place horse is 4th, and we left out the show horse. But be sure you look at that early, late difference graph. the one that's in the middle here, which shows the play source, over to the late side, which shows the win horse on the early side. Learn the difference between win and counter energy, and it will improve your exactness. Okay, we get now to the mighty onion. The mighty onion has been used by psychiatry and should be used by handicappers because we have so much noise, so much junk, so much misinformation clouding that moment of decision. And let's face it, no matter how good you may be as a handicapper, no matter how well you can select winners, it doesn't matter if you don't make the proper decision to bet them and bet them in a manner in which you can make a profit. So the contents of this hour will ask you to review handicapping history. How many handicappers really know the history of handicapping? How many can go back to Pittsburgh Phil at the turn of the century and understand what he used to get his winners and why you can no longer do what Pittsburgh Phil did to get winners? How many truly understand the difference, the formula for risk and reward? It's the simplest form of money management. You risk and you get back a reward for the degree of risk you take. And if you don't get back a degree of reward for the degree of risk you take, it's a losing proposition. Rules. Much of the stuff in this onion, much of the stuff that clouds you getting down to the nitty-gritty, much of those added leaves on the artichoke, the choke part, were rules. Rules that mean absolutely nothing, because successful handicapping cannot be gained through the adoption of rules. I don't care what rules. I want to ask a question first, and I'm going to go into it more deeply. Do you really want to win? Do you really want to win? Or do you want to just play a game? Do you want to just go to the races to have fun? Do you want to be a horse player? Or do you want to be a successful handicapper? The degree with which you wish to truly win will govern your future and will govern the effectiveness of the tapes you've already seen and the remainder of this tape. Do you really want to win? Ask yourself that question. Not right now, but in the quiet of the evening when you're trying to get to sleep or when you first wake up in the morning. Ask yourself and answer yourself truthfully. Do I really want to win? If you want to win, are the odds on your side? Do you want to win 480 horses, $5 horses, $6 horses, $7 horses? Do you want to break even? Do you want to just lose a little and rationalize it away? Or do you actually want to win by keeping the odds on your side and making sure you make a profit from your endeavor? Most people go to the races and most people brag about their winners and most people talk about their winners from one source, ego. They would rather win a race by just looking at it, say, I know who's going to win that race. I got this, this, and this. Ego. They're on an ego trip. They're not analyzing the race with any depth of intellect, with any insight. They're just on an ego trip. If you're on an ego trip, my friend, you're not going to be a consistent winner. If it's more important for you to say, I had that horse, even if you fail to bet it, then you're on an ego trip. You're not desiring to be a successful handicapper. In other words, you don't really want to win. All that's called contamination. You are contaminating your true capacity to be a winner with all sorts of extraneous things, the worst of which is your ego, and playing the game of going to the races, making it a game, being a horse player, and not a successful handicapper. The games, you remember the book that Eric Byrne read, Games That People Play? Oh, the games that people play now, every night and every day now, never knowing what they say now, never saying what they mean. Well, that's pretty true. That was a very big bestseller. People play games, we all play games. Life is just a game. We don't talk to people just because we want to convey to them, be sincere with them, be intimate with them. We play a game It's a transactional game. Steve Collison wrote about it a little bit in American Turf Monthly by saying that Yogi Berra once eloquently stated that half of hitting was 80% mental. Well, he wrote an article. That was about as far as it went into the psychology of winning. He did acknowledge that the psychology of winning was 80% of winning. It's not the information we gave you. It's not the information you get from books or lectures. It's what you have up here. It's how you view, how you utilize your information, and what information you accept as accurate and what is baloney. We have found, corny though they may seem, that the three C's are at the basis of winning at the races and winning money at the races. The three C's are consistency, corollaries, and confidence. Now, corollaries are what we've been talking about for the last 4 hours on these tapes. Looking at the readouts you have from a viable computer program and analyzing all the corollaries and the relationship between them before you make your selection. And doing it consistently. Don't do it one day, one way, and then do it the next day. And then the next day say, well, that didn't work, and then come up with a whole new set of corollaries. If you properly use your consistency, keep it consistent day in, day out, and you utilize your corollaries, you will develop confidence. Now, the biggest obstacle between winners and a successful trip to the teller window, capitalizing on those winners to make money, is failure to use those corollaries, which give you the confidence to make the proper bet. How often have you been 5 minutes before post time and you still haven't decided on what to bet? How often do you go up to that window and say, well, I'm going to bet the 3 and the 4, and then you hear somebody says, well, I work on backstretch for so-and-so, some famous trainer, or Abner Crabtree, he knows a lot. He told me it was a 6 horse. So instead of betting the 2 and the 4, you'll end up on the 11 and the 6 because you heard through the periphery of your ear somebody who knew something telling you to bet other than your first intention. It happens all the time. I had that horse, but I didn't bet it because, and you play the little game of, oh, poor little me. I was told by so-and-so, so-and-so. Now, they ought to know. And consequently had a loss. On this page, you'll see how medicine, psychiatry, and most of society view us. There are several journals I take, because I'm a member of this stupid National Council on Problem Gambling, Journal of Gambling Studies. They deal with such subjects as psychopathology in pathological gamblers seeking treatment, gender gambling and problem gambling and all this stuff that's underneath there. All this comes out of what we